You forgot the first rule of remakes, Jill. Don't fuck with the original.
Hey everyone! Kick-Ass 2 is coming out, and you know what that means?
Another installment of Don't F with the Original?
With myself, Dimitri, I am editor-in-chief of Idiomatic and movie critic.
Eric, I'm an English teacher.
And Chris, subtitle editor and occasional writer.
And Nicholas, I am the video game correspondent for Idiomatic.
And so we've decided to talk today about Kick-Ass, the superhero story or superhero satire, I should say, created by, was it Mark Miller?
Yeah.
And directed by Matthew Vaughn, who actually financed the movie himself, believe it or not. Anyway, Dave, who's a teenager, who's really unpopular and he's not doing too well, decides to become a superhero just for the heck of it because, hey, somebody has to. Puts on a costume, but forgets the part about having powers, so gets his ass thoroughly kicked. And the movie essentially follows his journey as he meets a dynamic duo of vigilantes, played by Nicolas Cage and Claire Moretz, and ends up in a war against a mob. One thing to mention, it is a dark movie with really, really dark jokes and heavy on the violence.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with this one, Dimitri. I agree. You mentioned that it was entirely self-financed. From what I understand, it wasn't fully, but it was entirely done outside of the studio. So at a certain point, was it Matthew Vaughn?
Yeah, Matthew Vaughn.
I think he was like $12 million out of his pocket, but he got it a bunch of other people. They put money in, and at a certain point, this was a sure investment because everyone who had invested in it, you know, had lost so much money. It was right when everything tanked, you know, so because it takes that long to make a movie. It was at that point that this Hollywood studios basically bought it out, you know, from them. And I think it was at that point that, you know, it had a lot of groundswell. It was an interesting endeavor. Mark Miller, you know, famous from the comic book side, you know, he's given us a lot of really interesting stories. He's working with John Romita Jr. on this one.
Yep.
And they'd already sold the idea for the screenplay while the comic was still in play. So they started working on the script while the comic was being produced. And they were both kind of feeding off each other at a certain point. So it became an interesting thing in terms of social marketing. They basically could say, you know, we want to sell this movie. We've got this many people following us. We've got this many people buying the comic. There was a lot of people just really excited to go see the movie. I was one of them. And I was really hoping that this was going to be the independent film that would basically show the Hollywood studios that it doesn't need to be a rehash of everything. And when it came out, it did really badly. The numbers weren't good. They were hoping that it would make $40 million the first weekend. It didn't even come close to that.
Yeah, well, although that's domestically, because internationally it kicked ass.
Yeah, no, it's true. And
pun intended.
But it took a little while to do that, and it's kind of too bad, because I really wanted this one to come in bigger than anything. This was at the beginning of a really bad summer, you know, just A-Team, you know, The Losers, you know, just a bunch of, like, mediocre films. This movie came in, and you mentioned it's quite dark. One of the main characters, Hit Girl, is quite young. I think she's, what, 11, 13?
The character is, I think, he's 11.
In a world that we're basically supposed to assume doesn't have any superpowers, and it just has people putting on costumes and going out there and basically becoming targets as a result. You know, she's probably the most superheroic. You know, she's amazing. And she becomes kind of this moment, and we maybe talk about the way she's fetishized at a certain point. You know what I mean? But I think they do kind of fall into that. But the thing is, when you look at the marketing, the only time I saw it on actually TV spots, it was showed as if it was a show for kids. And it really, it's not a kids movie in any way. It's quite violent and meant to be, and it's supposed to be off-putting.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's close to, it's Pulp Fiction style violence, you know, just, it's almost casual.
You having that, what was he, like 10 or 12 year old girl just beating 40 grown men, you know, basically killing them gorily and acting like it's perfectly normal and, you know, spewing like one-liners like a professional. That was hilarious. That was basically the part I remember the most about the movie and the best part. Main character, I did not care for that much.
Not really.
I thought he was just kind of whiny and useless.
Well, that is his character, in fairness.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't like my characters whiny and useless, you know. That's why I kind of gravitated all around Hit Girl. And her father as well, you know, Big Daddy.
Nicolas Cage.
That father-daughter relationship was like the best part of Kick-Ass for me.
The thing with Big Daddy and Hit Girl, they're very different in the movie than in the comics. In in terms of how they're treated. The characters are more or less the same, but the movie allows them to be cool for a while. They don't undercut it right away as they do in a comic book. Things are undercut really quickly in a comic book because Miller just can't write six words without becoming cynical.
Yeah.
Well, you take a look at the names he's given people. Mark D'Amico, the friend. You know, Lazuski, you know, the main character is a bit of a loser. You're right. Miller, you know, he's good, but yeah, he's not subtle.
No, exactly, yeah. And the movie actually allows Hit Girl and Big Daddy to be cool for a while, and it's sort of like they belong in a different movie. Like, it's as if they come from the comic book page and, like, invade this quote-unquote real world, and it's only slowly that the real world catches up to them. And I think that's the point of Hit Girl. Like, a lot of people have criticized, I was like, well, how can you let her get away with this level of violence? And I think it's because she's supposed to be completely insane at that point, and the violence eventually catches up to her in the end. It's actually a really effective scene, because when it does catch up to her in the battle scenes that it does, when she gets hurt, I actually reeled from it a couple of times where I winced and I was really uncomfortable with it, and that's the intended reaction.
I think you're right. In terms of Vaughn as a director, I think he's quite good at that point, because he builds up his character and it becomes this crescendo of violence. You know, the music's going, it's perfectly paired, and it's just this great choreography.
Having a little girl beat up like fully grown men and have it look, you know, believable. It's like, wow, and it's well filmed. Normally you would hide that with like shaky cam, you know, she can't kick or punch for crap, so you know it looks really weird, so you have to shake the camera so that you hide all those details. But no, it's filmed so you can see everything that's happening. It's great.
It's the music.
Yes.
That ridiculous Japanese banana song.
Yes. The second piece as well, where it starts, you know, it starts like the Superman song, whatever it's called, and you think that's going to be like, okay, this is what, you know, the action is going to start, and then, like, what is the dumbass song that plays afterwards? Like, don't give a damn about my reputation or something like that. It's like, oh my god, you know, just the switch from, like, a song you think is going to be oh so solemn, it's like, true, nope, we're playing this song instead. But yeah, her scenes, yeah, the musical accompaniment, like, sells it for me as well.
And the thing that takes her down is the thing that would take someone down that size. Mm. You know, like, suddenly it becomes very human, and really all it is just one punch. You know?
Yeah.
And she's down, and she's hurt, because she's an 11-year-old kid against a fully grown man who landed a lucky punch.
Mm. I find, like, sucking the audience in into a fantasy and then cutting it down really brings the point across, which, by the way, I want to talk a bit about the point. A lot of people say it's like, oh, it's anti-superhero movies, and others say it's celebrating violence. And I think mostly the message of this story is that the fantasy invites you to do this, but look, if you do this in real life, you're a moron. Like,
well, just to repeat.
So, wait a minute. I dyed my underwear for nothing?
Oh, that's dye? Oh, that's such a relief.
Yeah, to go back with the premise of what the movie starts with, it's just, you know, you've got the character Kick-Ass who basically asks, like, people do so many crazy things. Why don't they do this? You know, you've got people pretending to be vampires. You've got people doing everything. You know, it's just like, why don't we have people dressing up and being superheroes? Is it a question of, do we really not care about right and wrong? Or is it just that everyone knows at base that they're not going to get anywhere and that the individual really can't do much? The characters who are really the effective vigilantes are, you know, basically corrupt at a certain point. You know, you know, Big Daddy and Hit Girl. And the character Lazuski, who, you know, becomes Kick-Ass, he becomes more swept away by the idea of he's put on this mask and now he's become famous. You know, we don't see him on that many capers. You know, it's just like, there's a couple training sessions, he does some stuff, he stumbles on a few things, but it's more him going through petitions for his help. You know, it's just, and people like the idea of this character then being out there, he likes the idea of being that character, but it's a question of like, well, what does he do with his time, except answer his Facebook updates?
Yeah, it's worth noting that all the characters that penetrate that superhero fantasy in the movie are all gigantic nerds. I mean, they give Big Daddy an origin that's a little bit more violent, but Nicolas Cage's performance, the inflection he takes when he plays Big Daddy in his superhero persona, hints that really he's just a gigantic nerd who watched way too much episodes of a specific TV show that I won't spoil.
No. It's maybe one of the year's best performances.
Do you think that was like an actor's choice, or the director just, you know, said, no, you need to be like Adam West? And Cage said, yeah, okay, I'll do that.
I don't know if it was Matthew Vaughn or Nicolas Cage. What I can say with confidence is that it wasn't in the screenplay.
Okay.
So it's either director Matthew Vaughn or Nicolas Cage as an actor.
Nice. Good choice there.
I'll jump in here.
Spoil.
No. I don't usually like Nick Cage. I'm not a big fan of his movies. Sorry, Chris. But I gotta say, he was pitch perfect in that role. He was funny. He was great. And him alone, his performance alone is worth watching the film. But that being said, it's also a very good film. I kind of like the idea of a superhero that all of a sudden has a Facebook page that all of a sudden would get so many hits on YouTube. Because there are going to be hits about happy slapping or people getting into all sorts of weird fights. And people will watch it. So, yeah, it kind of makes sense that the snotball dressed in a wetsuit would all of a sudden be a vigilante. And yet, people will watch it.
Well, he asks people to call for help. The one time he actually is a successful hero on his own, the one thing he's trying to do, he doesn't do well, and then he stumbles into something else, and then he needs help, and he's actually, call 911. And people don't react to actually do that. People like the idea of someone there.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, huh? They use their cell phone to film it, not to call.
Yeah. So, block parents work because it becomes a community-oriented thing. You know, there's a couple of houses that have the sticker. Everyone kind of starts kind of focusing their attention on it. It becomes an awareness. You know, you can argue that if heroes were to exist in the real world, you know, it would be a sense of catharsis for the community. There'd be a groundswell up, and people would be more aware of, you know, graffiti and, you know, everything that they could maybe stop and let the hero stop the big things, let's say. You know, but in this movie, they don't do that. You know, you've got this thing that they can actually project onto, and all they do is actually, I guess, project onto him. You know, they actually film him. And I think it's almost that is quite realistic at this point, you know, in terms of the way we use media and the way we talk about things and the celebrity culture and, you know, the reality television, we just kind of want to gossip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I liked that part of the movie, you know, and it was quite realistic, you know, and the fact that the costume didn't fit quite well and, you know, you could see the stitching, you know. I noticed a lot of critiques came out right away saying, is this already superhero fatigue? And is this really a superhero movie?
Well, that's the thing. I don't find it is. I don't find it critiques the superhero genre in any way. You know, it doesn't say superheroes are dumb. It says putting on a suit is dumb. It's the application of fantasy in the real world. That's what it criticizes. Yeah. I think a lot of people miss the point.
I agree.
I want to also address Kick-Ass's relationship with his girlfriend.
Yeah, the main guy with his girlfriend there that thought he was gay or something, that could completely be removed from the movie. I didn't really care for it.
And yeah, a lot of people have been criticizing that, especially comic book fans have kind of brought up the fact that pretending to be gay to get closer to a girl is kind of gross and creepy, and there should be repercussions to that. And it's on because, to a certain degree, when I saw that scene, yeah, you know, he should have told the truth, but I was actually more bothered with her. Because I'm always opposed to the idea of, treating gay men as women's best friend like a dog. I find that offensive, and that's how she was behaving, and I'm surprised again by the fan reaction, who all seem to forgive that kind of behavior, which I find way more offensive towards gay people, certainly, than pretending to be gay for a few days.
I think, yeah, in the book, I guess, it's a serial, so it's once every couple of months you get the story and it's ongoing, so, you know, even in terms of time that you're reading it, it lasts for longer. It does go over much more quickly in the movie, and I'm glad about that. It still gets to a level where they're down to their underwear, and there's still the assumption there is no sexual attraction. You know what I mean? So it has crossed a line.
I agree, but at the same time, it's her fault. I mean, why? Because a man is gay, you're going to walk around naked next to him. I don't think that's acceptable behavior, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not disagreeing. It would have been nice if they'd kind of written it out, to be honest. And it's another clumsy metaphor in a way of I've got my mask on, but my mask is still there, da-da-da. You know, it's like the Hall of Mirrors, which is a lot of what, you know, that is, you know what I mean? Like a mask within masks that you see a lot in comic books is a little bit tiresome at a certain level. And I didn't think that part of it needed to be part of this story.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, well, it's the thing. It's Miller's work. You can see his cynicism. You can see him hammering down the points, even in the movie. You know, as much as I think Matthew Vaughn smoothed out a lot of the edges, there's still some edges there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think it's part of the movie's charm that everybody's a little bit scummy.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I agree. Do we want to talk about Christopher Mintz-Platz?
As soon as I know who that is.
He's the, we know him from Roleplay and...
Superbad.
Oh, he's MacGruber.
MacGruber.
Oh, okay.
And he plays Chris D'Amico, a.k.a. the Red Mist. A little bit more of an adult role than he's been playing. He's a bit of the perfect nerd build. In terms of acting, I don't know, like, do we take him seriously? Is it anything but the geeky sidekick?
I think he has a future in playing the geeky kids.
I wasn't distracted by him, personally. I thought he was fine.
I thought I would be, in a way, because he's such the overacted Revenge of the Nerds geek and everything else that I've seen.
But I like him. He looks like a geek, you know?
I think it's because that persona fit the role quite well, that it was okay. Mm. And especially since... one of the wise things they did in terms of casting is that they didn't overdo Kick-Ass. They didn't take the Jesse Eisenberg or...
Michael Cera?
Yeah. They didn't take Michael Cera. Like, they didn't take that type. They took somebody who's a little bit more virile, and his insecurity is not outward, it's more inward. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In Aaron Johnson, I think he plays it really well without ever delving into that type of performance, which we've been seeing a lot of lately, which left space for... MacGruber to be in the movie without it feeling redundant or tiresome. He was the only character like that, so it sort of didn't bother me because of that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I don't know, the scenes with the main character are like, yeah, this is, you know, once you see the other two, you go back to the main character who's still like completely useless and pathetic, and it's kind of a downer. You really, you know, show us more of your girl and Big Daddy, please. Like, at the beginning, I was fine with the main guy. Okay, well, he's pathetic. Okay, ha ha ha, he's starting to be a superhero. He's ridiculous. Okay, I can live with this movie, but then the movie is so heightened by the other two characters when you see them, see what they can do, that you go back to the main character, you're like, I don't want to see you. I want to see what the other two can do.
All in all, I was much more satisfied with the movie than I think some of the critics were. And I was surprised. I think there was a bit of a backlash against it. I think... At least some of the reviews I read is, I think they hadn't read the comic, to be honest, I don't think you needed to, but they felt like there was like a secret history that they weren't getting, or something, like, and they were kind of reacting against it, like we've spoken recently about Iron Man 2. A lot of it really is, you know, like kind of tip of the iceberg stuff, and they're talking about just this lore of like 40 years of Iron Man stories, you know. With Kick-Ass, there isn't that lore, you know, and you can go into it and it's a fresh slate, you know. But I do think people are kind of getting tired of these franchise stories that, you know, draw back on so many years of backstory.
I actually have a slightly different take on the critical reaction to it. I think there's still this stigma around being a comic book fan. And to be honest, the comic book fans bring it on themselves sometimes. Complete digression. But, for example, the reaction to The Dark Knight not being nominated for the Oscars had a whole bunch of people bashing gays and Indians. Because Slumdog Millionaire was nominated and Milk was. And I'm like, this is why people look down on comic book fans.
Yeah.
And I think there's still that view that the average comic book fan is this complete bigoted, small-minded idiot. And so when they saw Kick-Ass, I think they assumed that the comic book was being celebrated for its violence. And so they never really looked at what it was actually saying, because they went like, there you go. It confirms my view of these little trolls, you know?
Mm. Because I think if Quentin Tarantino had directed this, and it was the exact same movie, but it just had Quentin Tarantino's name, people would have thought that this was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
Yeah, it would have been his take on the comic book and everything else. It's like, look at this. He reinvented black exploitation film, now he's reinventing the comic book film.
Eric, what do you think? Kick-Ass? Kick-Ass?
Oh, man.
I had to.
No, you didn't.
This is Eric speaking.
Yes, Chris, this was Eric speaking.
No, it wasn't. I thought it was really good. I enjoyed it. Not the greatest film I ever saw, but still thoroughly enjoyable. Chris?
Yeah, I'm not going to compare it against everything I ever saw, but in terms of the recent releases to the cinema and something that I actually watched on the big screen, I'd say that this was an A-. I enjoyed it a lot. It was fun. I got exactly what I wanted out of it. it was a good popcorn movie, and I still have things to think about afterwards.
Yeah, if you go on the site and you look at the definition I give for A-, it's among the best of its genre. If you're familiar with the latter and want to try it out, this is where to start. And if you were to define Kick-Ass in terms of the genre, it's a superhero satire dark comedy. Now, I'm pretty sure there's only three of those, and it is the best of its genre.
Mr. Pluto or whatever it is? Like,
You know what, that Eddie Murphy movie?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what it's called.
How about Defendor?
Pluto Nash.
Pluto Nash, okay.
And Defendor. Yeah,
it's better than Pluto Nash.
Come on, people.
Alright, so Kick-Ass 2 is coming out.
Yeah.
Different director, unfortunately, Matthew Vaughn, not involved in this one.
Oh, why?
Too busy doing something else, I guess.
I guess.
Mark Miller, who wrote the original story.
Yeah.
Is coming back, and it's still his original story, his original continuation from Kick-Ass. So okay. At least there's some continuity on that level. We've all seen the trailer. What do you think?
I was very happy to see Hit Girl is back. You know, I was kind of disappointed at the end of the first movie when she becomes like a regular schoolgirl and everything. I was like, no, she's an awesome superhero. Why would she go for a normal life? It's boring. But then, you know, she says, no, you know, my father made me swear to protect this town, so I will. So she's back into being Hit Girl, and she is as awesome. Basically, the trailer is half of her doing cool shit, you know? So if the movie's like that, I'm very looking forward to it. Even the main character, kind of, you know, he's trained, so he's not as pathetic, you know. Hopefully he'll screw up a little bit, you know, because that's what you expect of him.
Or at least be hesitant about his awesomeness. Like, whereas Hit Girl is totally gung-ho and, like, all in.
Yeah.
He's probably, like, half into it only and a little bit more hesitant.
Yeah. Kind of sad that Nick Cage is not going to be there. Kind of dubious that they're replacing him with Jim Carrey, because I can count all the Jim Carrey movies I like on the zero fingers.
That was hard. I can count them on one.
Oh, really? Which one?
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless
Mind. Okay, where he's not playing a comedy, basically.
Well, it is a quirky comedy, but yeah, exactly. He's not playing his comedic role.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, but I didn't see that movie, so yeah. He's terrible. I hope the director can basically just restrain him and, you know, make him realize he's not the star. The girl is, you know, Hit Girl and, you know, main character is. He's there to support.
Yeah,
if he can do that, I'll tolerate it, you know, or I'll just, you know, just watch it on DVD and fast forward the scenes where he's there, either or.
I have to say, I have the exact same reaction you do, where I was like, all into it. I was like, okay, well, I'm a little bit hesitant because Matthew Vaughn's not coming back, and I thought he did such a terrific job with Kick-Ass. I thought he did great, but I'm like, oh, okay, it looks pretty well done, all right. And then Jim Carrey shows up as Captain Whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know about this. Because he has the potential of like being unbearable in every scene he's in, you know?
Just if you don't know what we're talking about, just, you know, watch Batman and Robin. To you know.
Yeah, that's a great example.
The Riddler doesn't have to chew the scenery in every scene, but he basically does. It's like, you know, you're basically drawn to him and nothing else on the screen because he's just so...
Over the top,
you know. He's not being like charismatic or anything. He's just like, hey, look at me, everybody. And that's basically, it's basically Riddler screaming, hey, look at me, the whole movie. It's really annoying. And I don't want that for Kick-Ass 2.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that is something that I'm worried about. But having said that, everything else in the trailer looks really interesting. I like that we have some continuity about who the villain is going to be. It seems to... that our little nerd boy, son of a mobster, is going to come back as he promised. And I like his name as a supervillain.
Indeed. If you don't know the name, check the Red Band trailer. It is hilarious.
Or if you want to be surprised during the movie, I think it has the potential of scoring one major big laugh if you don't know it's coming.
Yeah, indeed. That's true. That's a good point.
So if you have any questions, comments, or you want to share with us your love for Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
You can write us at mail@idiomanic.com or post a comment at idiomanic.com. We're also on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. We're also on iTunes. Until then,
see you next time.